given the volatility and what we've seen in these prices. It's hard to say at this moment whether we would be in a situation of having to draw on reserves.
The state keeps a watchful eye on dropping oil prices. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, June 29th. Good evening, I'm Daisha Eaton. Also tonight, a pharmacy owner in Sitka reacts to the Supreme Court's healthcare ruling.
We're going to be subjected to all these new regulations that I don't see us being able to afford.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Providence Imaging Center, helping cancer patients stay in Anchorage with a PET scanner that fuses anatomical and functional images since 2004. Learn more at provimaging.com. Avtech is recruiting rural Alaskans for computer and network training with no cost tuition for qualified applicants. For more about the Village Internet Agent Program, call 1-800-478-5389. This message sponsored by Avtech, Alaska's Institute of Technology.
The new year arrives this coming Sunday. That's the fiscal new year for most businesses and for the state. The budget the legislature passed during this year's session will also go into effect over the weekend. And the people who are already at work writing the budget for next year are keeping a careful watch on the effects of low oil prices. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
Alaska's fortune rises and falls along with the price of oil and with the amount of the state's most profitable resource that is produced. Oil prices hovered at less than $100 a barrel most of June, a price level that's lower than anticipated, but still comfortable for state revenue needs. Karen Rayfield is Director of Management and Budget for the Parnell Administration.
We're still projecting a considerable balance at the end of FY12 that would go into the statutory budget reserve, and we believe that will still be the case.
Legislative sources expect the most easily accessible account, the statutory budget reserve, will have about $5 billion in it when it's all counted in the coming months. However, bills that come due in the new fiscal year will be seen in a different light. Where the budget's break-even point for 2012 was about $85 a barrel, a $93 market price of oil is good. But with the 2013 budget's break-even point of $104 a barrel, that same price is troubling. Bill Thomas of Haines is co-chairman of the House Finance Committee and is responsible for writing the operating budget.
What I would consider our biggest fear is reality. So there's a lot of things that people think we should have added that we probably can't afford to do now.
However, it's an annual budget, and the price of oil that matters is the average price over the course of the coming year. Rayfield says the state is not short of cash, but the balance warrants watching between now and December when the budget for 2014 will be released. That's the one she's working on now.
Given the volatility and what we've seen in these prices, it's hard to say at this moment whether we would be in a situation of having to draw on reserves in FY13.
Thomas says legislators have been warning for several years now that high income with accompanying budget surpluses will not last. And he says budgets have minimized growth and included savings with the expectation that those savings would someday be needed to cover a shortfall.
We have money all over the place, and it's hard to figure out exactly, what we have.
The worst scenario would see both prices and production continuing to fall. The June average production was about 520,000 barrels a day in a pipeline built to carry four times that amount. Rayfield says seeing low prices heightens the awareness of the low production. And Thomas agrees, saying he's looking for a new incentive program from the governor that would increase production. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
Congress is wrapping up a heavy legislative week before the week-long 4th of July recess, and it was a big week for Alaska. APRN's Peter Granitz joined me to talk about how Alaska fared. He says one of the biggest wins for the state came in the transportation bill.
Congress needed to pass some form of extension to pay for the roads, bridges, and highways, and all sorts of construction projects across the country by this weekend to make sure that they didn't fault, that they didn't lose all the funding for it. So they actually wrapped the two projects up in one. And the transportation bill definitely has some perks for Alaska. It does retain Alaska Railroad funding. There was a thought that they were going to get zeroed out, which was a big fear. They do lose a little bit of money, but they walk away with about $31 million in guaranteed federal money. That should keep them afloat. The railroad put out a press release saying they're happy. It could have been worse. It could have been better, but they'll still be around. Also in there is funding for the Alaska Marine Highway. And what's interesting there is that they're shifting the funding focus away from grants to a trust fund. So this is a guaranteed source of funds. Now, that trust fund isn't going to be around forever, and it's something that will have to be revisited as soon as perhaps next year. But the money's there, and it's guaranteed for a little bit. And there is something interesting about this package. Representative Young was one of the people who was one of the conferees working on the final package. And I talked with him yesterday. What's interesting here is that he says a lot of the Alaska perks, which some people say were actually some sticking points until the end, are in the bill because of perhaps his ideological opposite, Senator Barbara Boxer from California. She's a progressive Democrat from Northern California. She leads the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. She's an out-and-out environmentalist. They are not at all the same person. They are total opposites. And yet he told me that they worked quite well with this, and she looked out for Alaska, and he was incredibly grateful to her for that.
It seems Congress is on a roll of passing legislation. What's happening here?
Congress is, in fact, on a bit of a roll. I wouldn't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, though. But, you know, the Senate has been working under what's called regular order, where amendments come up. Senators don't know the outcome of the votes yet. A lot of times, leaders will only bring the votes to the floor if they know it'll pass. And that hasn't been the case. The minority has been allowed to bring up amendments and votes, and some of them pass and some of them don't. And it's brought a little bit of comity back to the upper chamber. And that's interesting to see. And just yesterday, I asked Senator Murkowski if she thought that momentum was going to continue on and that feeling of collegiality is going to continue on. And she seemed a bit optimistic, which is interesting because she's in the minority. And I asked the same thing of Senator Begich, and he didn't sound too optimistic. So I don't want to look too far ahead of this.
Peter, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Peter Granitz is APRN's Washington, D.C. correspondent. When the Supreme Court decided to uphold most of the Affordable Care Act, it raised a whole batch of new questions about how the legislation will play out. And it's those unknowns that have some small businesses on edge. KCAW's Rachel Waldholt spoke with local business owners in Sitka and has this story.
Trish and Dirk White own Sitka's two pharmacies with 33 employees. And they say, as both pharmacists and small business owners, they're worried about the impacts of the Affordable Care Act. Asked for their first reaction when they heard the Supreme Court had upheld the act, they said,
"Can't put that on the radio."
Okay, wait a minute. There's parts that I agree with, and there's parts that I just don't see how they can be implemented without a lot of struggle and cost to the average American.
The Whites say they already spend thousands of dollars every year to keep their pharmacies in compliance with existing federal regulations. They even have someone on staff whose only job is to make sure they're following all the rules. The Whites say they don't know what kind of regulations will come with the Affordable Care Act, but they worry it could increase those costs.
Yeah, there are parts that are great, but the fact that we're going to be subjected to all these new regulations that I don't see us being able to afford.
The Whites also offer medical benefits for their 28 full-time employees, and they say they are holding their breath to see how the act might affect the cost of providing medical coverage. The goal, of course, is for those costs to go down.
In 30 years of, yeah, it's never gone down. It's only gone up double digits.
In that worry, they're not alone. Stephanie Brenner owns Brenner's Fine Clothing and Gifts on Lincoln Street.
I don't think people realize how large the burden is for small businesses to offer health care.
Brenner has 7 employees, 4 full-time and 3 seasonal. Her business doesn't offer benefits. It would be too expensive, she says.
We'd have to cut people's wages to offer them benefits.
Under the Affordable Care Act, businesses with 50 employees or more would have to offer health insurance plans. Neither Brenner's nor the Whites are large enough to face that requirement. The law includes tax credits to help small businesses afford coverage for employees. but neither business knows yet if they're eligible. The Whites do think the law has some good aspects.
To make it healthcare available to everybody is an honorable thing, and I would wish for that to work. I like the idea that kids like that are attending college can be, still be on their parents' plan. I mean, that's huge. That's had a huge impact personally on us. And
in the end, the Whites agree. Nobody yet knows what the impacts will be.
I think all of us, it would behoove us all to do a little more homework.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Rachel Waldholz.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Bethel prepares for the next best thing to a Taco Bell, 10,000 free tacos.
We're going to be giving away or feeding Taco Bell to the residents of Bethel.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. And by Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
Greenpeace is making its way north as part of its campaign against Arctic drilling. The motor yacht Esperanza is leaving Kodiak today and is scheduled to stop in Unalaska next week. The vessel had previously been in Seward for repairs. According to Greenpeace campaign director Dan Howells, the 237-foot rainbow-painted boat will then travel on the Chukchi Sea and study marine life in the region. Greenpeace had initially timed the trip so that the Esperanza would shadow Shell's drill ships as they did exploratory work in the Arctic. But because of persistent sea ice, Shell is delaying their drilling schedule. Howells says that the Esperanza will continue to the Arctic without them.
I think the sea ice is kind of funny in many ways. It's Mother Nature batting last, where Shell has plans to have their vessels in place long before now and to start drilling sometime in the beginning of July. They're probably, you'd have to ask them, but it seems like they're probably at least 2 weeks, if not 3 weeks, behind.
There are 24 people aboard the Esperanza right now, a mix of scientists and crew. They plan to take photographs of the Chukchi lease site using drones and record video footage with submarines, and then post that material online. University of Alaska President Pat Gamble is proposing a 2% tuition hike for the 2013-2014 school year. The increase, if approved by regents, would be the smallest at UA in over a decade. Associate Vice President for Student Enrollment Saichi Oba says the hike reflects increased fixed and labor costs and the burden of higher tuition.
It's trying to strike a balance, and I think President Gamble for this particular proposal, it has really taken to heart the voice of students and others in the state, as well as just the national climate.
The increase would raise tuition for full-time undergraduates between $45 and $60 per semester. Oba says UA tuition ranks in the middle among universities in other Western states. As the sockeye and chum runs pick up on the Kuskokwim River, salmon fishing restrictions have eased for lower river fishers. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Angela Denning Barnes reports.
About 120 miles of the Kuskokwim from the mouth to the village of Tuliksak has seen some relief from recent salmon fishing restrictions. The river was originally put on rolling closures of 7 days. It was the longest fishing restriction in the river's history. Nets were restricted to 4 inches to avoid any chance of catching king salmon, which is seeing one of the weakest runs on record. Then, state managers announced a 5-day extension of the closure. That led to more frustration among fishers concerned with getting enough food for the winter, and several villages fished in protest last week. Citations were given and fish and nets were seized. After 12 days of no salmon fishing, a 3-day opener was called for other salmon species. Nets were restricted to 6-inch gear. Still, fishers were concerned that the good weather for drying a winter supply of fish had passed them by. Bethel fisher John Wallace.
When you added 5 days to it, look where we are now. We're in the middle of a 3-day opening, and it's liquid water out there for air. It is a struggle where there's going to be waste.
Wallace was scolding fish managers at a recent meeting of the Kuskokwim River Salmon Management Working Group. The group advises state and federal managers. They sought to extend the three-day opener to 6 days.
It is not going to hurt to have a three-day extension.
That's Beverly Hoffman, chair of the working group.
I don't feel that people are going to go out with six-inch nets just to try and get a couple of kings. I know for the first time in four decades, my family is not putting up strips.
Strips traditionally come from king salmon, cut into long ropes that are dried and smoked. Last week, the advisory group was overruled by fish managers. The group had recommended a fishing window between the 7 and 5 day closures. But the fish managers overruled that. Civil disobedience ensued. This week, fish managers responded to local requests and agreed to extend the limited openers to 6 days for the whole river. They say the king run appears to be late and is picking up. Kevin Schaberg is a research biologist with Fish and Game.
There is some potential for achieving our management objective based on this late run timing figure.
However, managers are still playing it safe and did not agree to another recommendation by the advisory group, which would reduce closures by 2 days on the middle and upper river. Those areas remain on 12-day closures, which will be followed by 6-day openers. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
The community of Bethel is getting a fast food treat this Sunday in the form of tacos, thousands and thousands of tacos. As KYUK's Mark Earhart reports, the chief executive officer of Taco Bell is sending Bethel this free gift, along with a film and video crew, because of a hoax.
Yo quiero Taco Bell.
This commercial was a hit for the fast food chain Taco Bell back in 1997. The cute Spanish-speaking chihuahua slinging gorditas and Mexican pizza was in the windows of franchises across America, everywhere except for Bush, Alaska. Well, this is going to change, even if it's just for one day.
You know, we're going to be giving away or feeding Taco Bell to the residents of Bethel.
That's Taco Bell CEO Greg Creed. He says 10,000 completely free tacos will be given away at the event. That means come Sunday morning, there will be more tacos in Bethel than people. So why all the sudden generosity? Earlier this month, there was a hoax that Bethel was getting a Taco Bell franchise, a fact that Creed says is completely false.
We didn't think the rumor or the hoax was that funny. And the great thing is we reached out to the mayor, and he's been an incredible partner with us. And, you know, we're obviously working with him to feed Taco Bell to the community of Bethel, which we think is a fantastic thing.
Now, Creed was quick to point out that Bethel is still not getting a Taco Bell franchise. As he puts it, he wants to turn a negative into a positive through the event. Creed says he will be working with a franchise in Anchorage to get all the ingredients to Bethel, where they'll then be assembled by a Taco Bell team. He says his company is even sending a film and social media crew out to cover the event.
We want to interview the community to talk about great things that are being done in the Bethel community, and then use our digital and social presence. We have about 8.5 million Facebook followers, and what we want to do is get some recognition for all the wonderful things, all the community things that are being done in Bethel.
It is safe to say that some Bethel residents see all this attention as Taco Bell's way of exploiting the community to help sell more tacos.
There'll always be the skeptics, and my hope is that, you know, after Sunday, that they see what we do and they believe it, that we're doing good things and that we have the right intent.
We will just wait and see when the Taco Bell Circus comes to town this weekend. I'm Mark Earhart.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
Alaska Housing Finance Corporation offers home choice seminars that provide tools for making informed decisions about purchasing and financing a home and loans tailored for first-time home buyers. There's more information at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Benninger. This week on AK, Ionia. Among thick spruce forests just a few miles offshore of Cook Inlet near Kasilof, about 40 people have been carving out their own version of an Alaskan life. It's called Ionia, not a commune exactly, but a place where residents can live a different kind of life. Now in its third decade on the Kenai Peninsula, the community continues to grow, and not just in numbers. KDLL's Shaylin Cochran visited Ionia and has the story.
For the past 3 years, Ionia residents have been building what will be one of the biggest log barns in the state. Right now, the barn is open to the elements, but with a special mixture of straw and clay, residents are quickly getting the walls sealed up so work can continue throughout the winter. Ted Ellers is one of the first generation of Ionia residents. He says the mission of Ionia is to strive for a healthy balance in the way residents live, eat, build, and interact with each other.
We've all been together for 30-some years now, and we're still just beginning to learn how much of a resource we are to each other and how to treat each other and how to leave our children alone so that they can be our teachers.
In the early 80s, a small group, including Ellers and his wife Eliza, were finding it difficult to function in a balanced way in an increasingly unbalanced world. Eliza says after brief stops in other parts of the country that weren't too keen on a band of young families living in teepees, they decided to try their luck in Alaska.
To be able to be isolated, but not too isolated, because, you know, we needed to create a little space from society as it is in order to try to make a world that made a little more sense to us.
In the late 60s and early 70s, the founding generation was involved in the science of macrobiotics, which emphasizes a diet in natural whole grains and locally sourced vegetables, avoiding processed foods and animal products. They spent time studying and learning at the Cushy Institute, a natural healing center in western Massachusetts. A few years ago, Fia Cushy, the son of the Institute's founders, moved to Ionia to pursue his version of the macrobiotic lifestyle.
To me, I would emphasize more that macrobiotics means, on a personal level, being more self-aware about how about yourself and how things affect you, so that when you are eating food, you know, it's not about the diet, it's about how it's affecting you, and being able to be sensitive enough to know how to improve or maneuver your life accordingly.
And they do make those changes here. When I visited, the entire community had just begun a 10-day technology fast. No computers, no internet, no movies. Experiments like this are common and a big part of the philosophy of the group. Ionia is where, as they say, common sense comes alive. After lunch, a tasty dish of lentil soup, quinoa, and fresh steamed greens from their own garden, it was back to work on the barn where more than a dozen residents had come to pitch in, and where I met Gail, a sort of de facto member of the community who's been coming from the UK for the past 2 summers.
I am involved in repairing historic buildings and natural building in the UK, and I was interested in straw clay building. And I asked around a few friends and they put me in touch with a guy who was teaching a straw clay workshop in Canada. And I went over to that and I met the guys from Ionia who were taking the workshop at the same time.
In addition to her expertise in the building methods being put to use here, Gail also practices macrobiotics, and so fitting into the group comes very naturally and is what draws her back each summer. As the assembled crew gets to work, I ask Eliza about this particular part of the process they hope will be done by the end of the summer so work inside can begin.
And right now I'm just spraying the wood down a little bit because as this goes in, we don't want it to suck out the wood to soak up all the moisture. And then we're going to stuff that straw clay in there and that's it. And then it dries all summer. And next year we'll put a coating of plaster, natural plaster, on the outside, so it'll look kind of like adobe.
As with most projects here, the barn is a work in progress, used as much for storage and a dry place to work as it is a place to learn and show what is possible if you slow down and take your cues from nature a little bit more. For AK, I'm Shaylin Cochran.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week we're heading to Bettles, the tiny interior community on the edge of Gates of the Arctic National Park.
My name is Jamie Clays, and I work at the Bettles Lodge, and I'm from Bettles, Alaska. Bettles is like being on an island because we're a fly-only village. It's a small community with dirt roads and about 30 people. We have a park service ranger station and a lodge and an air taxi and one other air taxi in town. and a weather station, and that's pretty much the only jobs here. I really liked growing up here because you knew everyone, all your neighbors. It was a safe place to grow up, and I feel like whether you grow up in New York City or Bettles, you have, your world is only so big as a little kid. Bettles is really unique because where we're at, international travelers come through all the time to go see the Brooks Range, to go hiking or rafting. So although it's isolated, we meet people from all over the world. So even growing up, we got to meet a lot of people doing a lot of different things. We're not right up against the mountains, so the terrain is pretty unfriendly for hiking and things. So a lot of the locals actually like the winter better because they don't feel as isolated. They can go out on the frozen ground, whereas in the summer it's pretty challenging. You can be in the boat, but you can't really just hike off into the tundra. It's pretty swampy. Now they're talking about putting a road through Bettles. There's huge mining, mineral deposits over there. And so, if that happened, I guess the future of Bettles would look drastically different than without a road. It's absolutely gorgeous. I mean, even though I grew up here, every time I go on the Koyukuk or go out in an airplane, I feel just so blessed to be able to see and do the things that we do up here. It makes it worth it, all the isolation and life here. I always compare it to a third world country. It's very different than living, in the city with all the amenities. But it definitely makes it worthwhile once you put it in perspective and see the beauty.
Jamie Clays works at the Bettles Lodge. She's organizing the community's first music festival later this summer, August 10th and 11th. The band Sweating Honey will be there, and Clays says there will be free camping and a pie-eating contest. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Shaylin Cochran, Annie Feit, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Benninger.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Rachel Waldholtz in Sitka, Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Angela Denning Barnes and Mark Earhart in Bethel. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau, and Peter Granitz from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Kristen Spack is our web producer, and I'm Daisha Eaton.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com. And by GrantStation, your fast track to funding, helping identify appropriate grantmakers for your organization's programs and projects. On the web at grantstation.com. The grocery store meltdown. We've all seen it. Harried and frustrated mom, tired toddler in full tantrum mode, and out of nowhere comes a young stock clerk. Drops to his knees next to the screaming child and starts rolling cans and making funny noises. The diversion works. Distracted from his tantrum, the toddler stops crying. Mom takes control and finishes her shopping. Families are stronger when others take an interest. This message sponsored by Best Beginnings, Alaska Children's Trust, and Strengthening Families Alaska.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.